Welcome in to the latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And we got one more show for you guys to wrap up the week, finish the week strong, heading into the weekend. And this is one of my favorite shows I do every season. We're ranking the SEC play callers slash coordinators, however you want to break it down. But there are a couple head coaches that call their own plays there. So factoring in those head coaches as well, that's going to be the main show topic we got for this episode of the show. But we do got some recruiting nuggets, particularly there in the SEC East, to kick things off. So let's start right there in Gainesville, where, man, rough news here. Billy Napier era. We're not hitting the panic button way too early. I mean, the man's not even coached a damn game yet. Yet things are not going great there on the recruiting front. We teased it with Matt Ray from Sports Illustrated. If you missed that earlier in the week, he recently attended the overtime OT7 7-on-7 camp, which featured several of the nation's top quarterbacks. And according to Matt, Jaden Rashada was the quarterback that, in his mind, was the second best quarterback behind only Nico, Tennessee's five-star quarterback. And that includes Malachi Nelson, Southern Cal commit, Lincoln Riley commit, who a lot of people have as the number two quarterback prospect behind just Arch Manning. There was Dante Moore, the Michigan five-star. But according to Matt Ray, Jaden Rashada, shooting up the charts, looked outstanding. He was set to make his decision on Saturday, and all the buzz was the Florida Gators, Billy Napier, looking great for Jaden Rashada. And now he's pushed back his commitment date, which obviously with the Gators getting all that momentum, you don't want to see a guy push the, not the reset button, but just kind of delaying what everyone thought was maybe the face of the Florida Gators after Anthony Richardson leaves Gainesville, whenever that is. But again, it's not time to hit the panic button because Jaden Rashada, he still could be a Florida Gator. He announced here on Thursday he's pushing it back just about a week or so. June 26th is when he's going to make his decision. Florida, obviously, right in the thick of this recruitment. LSU, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Miami, all in it for Jaden Rashada. And I was not even aware of this, but his brother is now an Ole Miss Rebel. So maybe the Rebels in this thing if he wants to play with his brother. But that's just something to think about. And of course, I mean, we got to say it, and I have no information, so I'm not claiming there's any shenanigans because, hell, it's legal anyway for the most part. But NIL, how much does this play into a factor here? Florida fans, of course, Billy Napier basically on record saying we're not going to use NIL as an inducement, which you're not allowed to do anyway. But I just listed some others there. A&M, Miami, they've been accused of doing all that. So was that a factor? Who knows? But that's something that Gator Nation is, they're in an uproar heading into the weekend here. They thought they were going to get one of the top quarterback prospects in the country committed, and they still may, but it's going to be delayed, which, again, till June 26th, Jaden Rashada, quarterback out of California, set to make his commitment, not this weekend. So that's not great, obviously, but it got a little worse because let's kick it down to Athens real quick, where Georgia reached into the state of Alabama, landed a commitment here from five-star defensive back A.J. Harris. He's the number five cornerback prospect in the country, one of the top 25 prospects overall in the country. And apparently, Florida thought they were right in the thick of this thing here with A.J. Harris. And not only, you know, to make matters worse, if you're not going to get a guy, the worst place he could go if you're a Florida fan is Georgia, where they're just racking up five-star defensive backs there in Athens, the reigning national champions. And how about this? Georgia now has a top 10 recruiting class, which we all know they were going to have eventually, but they're the only program in the top 10 with single-digit commitments. They've only got nine, yet they're still in the top 10. That speaks to the caliber of athletes they have committed down there in Athens, Georgia's going to roll towards another top five recruiting class, you have to believe. And that's before, you know, no quarterback in that class, which we all know who they're after, Arch Manning, the number one overall prospect in the country. If he's looking to vault this Georgia class, his commitment alone will probably knock it into the top five and probably cement it as a top two or three class when all said and done, if not number one overall. So great news for Georgia, obviously. Terrible news for Florida. But that, again, goes back to, you know, how we opened this thing. That's kind of been the narrative. Billy Napier kind of getting worked on the recruiting trail by Kirby Smart and company. But if you're a Gator, I mean, you clearly got to turn around on the recruiting trail to compete with Georgia. But at the same time, you just had a terribly disappointing season, whereas Georgia won the national championship. So what's the expectation that, you know, Billy Napier and company is going to beat Nick Kirby Smart? They're not going to beat him on many guys right out the gate. But just some really rough news there for Billy Napier and company heading into the weekend on the recruiting trail. But that's all we got for news around the SEC. Now let's get into what I was teasing there in the opening. The coordinator, play caller, rankings in the SEC. The way I do this, rank the offense, rank the defense, combine the rankings. Lowest score means your program's got a hell of a duo there at the play caller slash coordinator positions. And we'll start with the offense here. I like to start at the bottom, work my way up. You know, if I'm being completely honest, these two guys, I basically gave them an incomplete because I just don't know much about them. So I give them, assign them number 13 overall offensive coordinators in the SEC. Eric Casale there from Auburn and Rich Scangarello for Kentucky. Now, again, hell, I had Liam Cohen in about this position last year, and he was one of the best coordinators in the country. So if I'm a Kentucky fan, if I'm an Auburn fan, I'm not panicking that this is where I got your coordinator, your offensive play callers at the moment. But going off of what Dave Bartu told me, and this is what he does for a living, he scouts these guys, grades them across their stops. Casale, you know, not the highest graded offensive coordinator there at Boise. And hell, if Brian Harsin really thought this was the man for the job, you got to wonder why the hell did he get the job last year? Had to promote from within. We all know the story there. Rich Scangarello, again, NFL experience, going to have to transition to the college game, obviously, but he's got a hell of a building block there with Will Levis and Eli Cox in the middle of that offensive line to kind of, and of course, Chris Rodriguez, assuming that, you know, he's eligible and good to go right out the gate. He's got the building blocks here to have an outstanding offense, but just don't know enough about these guys to really fairly grade them any higher than where they are. So I'm kind of leaning on my man, Dave Bartu, and his play caller rankings for those two selections. Now at number 12, offensive coordinator, here we've got some data on these guys in the SEC. I'm going Joey Lynch, Vanderbilt, play caller. And again, it's tough to grade Vanderbilt because deficiencies across the board when we're talking talent comparison to everywhere in the SEC. Depth is an issue. Talent is an issue. Lack of playmaking, an issue. But Vanderbilt certainly didn't show much on the offensive side of the football last season. 96 in offensive efficiency. 12th in the SEC in red zone scoring. And then dead last in scoring, third down conversions, and explosive plays. So, Joey Lynch, you got your work cut out for you. You know, you got Ken Seals, Mike Wright. You got quarterbacks to work with, but the offensive line has just been a disaster there, and you just lost your best offensive lineman, your left tackle, to Alabama. So, again, it's just going to be an uphill climb there for Vanderbilt. So, that's kind of where I've got Joey Lynch, number 12 in the SEC. Now, number 11, I don't think it's going to surprise anybody, but Marcus Satterfield, South Carolina. Gamecocks were 99th overall in the country in offensive efficiency last season. And then next to last, if not for Vanderbilt, South Carolina would have been dead last in all these categories. Scoring offense, converting on third down, red zone scoring, and explosive plays of 20 or more yards. And that's passing or rushing. So just all kinds of issues they had to work through there in Columbia last season. Now, here's another one. You know, Marcus Satterfield, easy target. Should have been fired. We've heard that time and time again. But you know, there was issues on the offensive line. Didn't have any quarterbacks in there that could stay healthy. And then the most talented guy they had, Luke Doty, I mean, he got hurt in preseason camp, threw a wrench in the whole damn thing. Now, they came out in the bowl game in North Carolina. I thought the game plan was outstanding with Dekarion Joyner back there. And they got Jakeem Bell more involved. And we finally saw Kevin Harris, who he had a back injury. He had to have back surgery leading up to the season. So, you know, you start adding it up. There's hope that Marcus Satterfield, he said maybe he may be a hell of a lot better coordinator than we're giving him credit for. Insert a Spencer Rattler, insert a number of weapons to work with that they didn't have last year, a running back group that looks loaded there in Columbia. There's no excuses anymore for Marcus Satterfield. I believe I heard J.C. Sherbert say the other day, 150 combined starts for this offensive line. So there's no more excuses. Marcus Satterfield, you're going to have to take a big jump up this list next season with everything you got to work with. And there's at least reason to believe, if you're a South Carolina fan, that Marcus Satterfield is a hell of a lot better coordinator, play caller than he showed last season. Now, number 10, again, we're getting some quality coaches here because I think the SEC is loaded with offensive coordinators right now. Mike Denbrock, LSU offensive coordinator, was at Cincinnati last season. But, you know, like Dave Bartu liked to point out, he had Desmond Ridder, one of the first quarterbacks taken in the NFL draft, in the most recent draft, of course. And Cincinnati went to the college football playoff. We got to give them their due respect. They were number one in the AAC in explosive plays, number two in scoring offense, number four in third down conversions, number eight in red zone scoring, and overall number 29 most efficient offense in the country at Cincinnati, which is pretty remarkable. Last season at Mike Denbrock, he's going to have to work around a reshuffled offensive line. They don't know who their quarterback's going to be. Running backs, they got talent, but they need players to emerge there. So I think number 10 is a fair spot for Mike Denbrock until further notice. This is a guy that he's worked with Brian Kelly before at Notre Dame. And as I understand it, he lost that job. That's why he was at Cincinnati. So, you know, it's kind of a unique situation that Brian Kelly's bringing him back. But, hell, if Brian Kelly didn't think he was a good coach, he wouldn't have hired him in the first place down here in Baton Rouge. So, he's one where it's kind of up in the air. Just because I didn't watch Cincinnati football, I got to be honest with you. But looking at his numbers, did an outstanding job, but probably had the best quarterback in that conference. So he should have done a good job. So Mike Denbrock, you got something to prove this season to me. Now, number nine, this may be a little surprising, but again, got a ton of good play callers here on the offensive side of the football in the SEC. I got Billy Napier. Again, not studied a ton of Louisiana football, got to be completely honest with you, but number 43, most efficient offense in the country last season. That was a surprise when I looked that up. However, they were number two in the Sun Belt in explosive plays, third in scoring in the Sun Belt, fourth in third down conversions, and eighth in red zone scoring. So respectable numbers to be sure, but you got to think Louisiana, you know, they play in a league with Coastal Carolina, and I believe there's one other where they just are just very explosive on offense. But beyond you know, the top dog or two in the offensive rankings there for the Sun Belt Conference, Louisiana was near the top of all metrics there. So Billy Napier, hell, he's worked for Dabo. He's worked for Nick Saban. I got confidence that now that he's got Anthony Richardson and he's got a stable of running backs there, I think the offense is going to be fine there in Gainesville this season with Billy Napier. But until further notice, I can't put him much higher than this on the list for the time being. He's got to prove it in the SEC to me. Now, this may be a surprising one. Again, we're pretty loaded here with offensive play callers in the SEC. But number eight, I got Jimbo Fisher. Probably a lot further down the list than a lot of people would imagine, but A&M, eighth in scoring last year in the SEC, 10th in third down conversions, 10th in explosive plays of 20 or more yards, and 59th overall in offensive efficiency. Now, I know Aggies, you're screaming right now at your radio. Quarterback got hurt. That's fair, but hell, we'll get to this guy in a minute here, but Stetson Bennett was not the starting quarterback for the Georgia Bulldogs coming out the season either. And Georgia's offense didn't fall down a cliff. And I think if we're being honest, everybody and their mother would have taken Zach Calzada over Stetson Bennett coming out of high school, and hell, even coming into last season. You have to work with what you got. Georgia wanted Zach Calzada. Hell, Auburn picked him up immediately because they thought he was a quality player. So I get kind of tired of people just piling on Zach Calzada because the Aggies, I don't know. I mean, they've been solid under Jimbo, but it's not been an offensive juggernaut. Where is the explosive passing? That's not been there the entire time. You know, even towards the tail end of his time there at FSU, the explosive offense and the quarterback play wasn't there. So Jimbo, I think, has got a lot to prove. He's got to nail this quarterback decision, and it's a tough one because he's got three quality options to pick from. But if he picks a wrong one, we're going to have a lot of these same issues. And until further notice, I don't think you can put Jimbo much higher on this list when it comes to offensive play calling. Now, at times, he dials up perfect game plan. And then other times, I'm scratching my head wondering what the hell he's doing out there. So, number eight, Jimbo Fisher, offensive play caller. Again, we got to remember, as dominant as A&M's defense has been, one of the most dominant in the conference the last two seasons. And that's played a huge role in the Aggies climbing up the SEC ladder. It's been more the defense than it has been the offense. So again, they've got the pieces to work with. Now we got to see some better results than what we've been getting here in College Station the last couple of seasons, particularly last season. All right, number seven, I got Bill O'Brien, Alabama. Now, how you're sitting here saying, well, how in the hell can Bill O'Brien be so low? He had the Heisman Trophy winner. He's got all these first round receivers. Number two, most efficient offense in the country. Led the SEC in scoring 39.9 points per game. So what's not to like? Well, he's got the best players. He should be doing this stuff. And they actually went down from 48. They averaged over 48 points per game in 2020. They went down to 39 points per game last season. Now, they led the SEC in third down conversions. They led them in red zone scoring, led them in explosive plays. But again, when you've got a talent advantage over damn near every team you face, with the exception of Georgia, you know, that's probably what your numbers should be looking like when you got the Heisman Trophy quarterback, maybe the most talented quarterback that that program's ever had. And that's saying something. But Bryce Young was that damn good last season. So Bill O'Brien, I got him a little bit lower than probably than people, most people would. I think he did a solid job last season, to be sure. But if you listen to Dave Bartu, he says, hell, he cost him a national championship down there. I don't know. I think Georgia had more to do with that than anything. But yeah, Bill O'Brien, number seven. That's a tough spot to put him. But I think it's fair at this point in time. Now, number six, I think it's going to be a surprise too. Eli Drinkwitz, up there at Missouri. The Tigers were second in the SEC in converting in the red zone last season, scored on 90% of their trips to the red zone. Tyler Beatty, of course, broke out, was arguably the most productive running back in the SEC. And I guarantee you, no one saw that coming as you know, he flashed some potential, but 1,600 rushing yards, get out of here. No one saw that coming. And Larry Rountree before that, I mean, all he does is produce these dominant running backs, and he's done it with, you know, limited options at quarterback. They were number six in third down conversions in the SEC. But one issue here, and this goes back to why I think the quarterback's no longer there, 12th in the SEC in explosive plays of 20 or more yards. So they really need a quarterback at Missouri that can push the ball down the field. If they get that with the receivers they're working with, I'm telling you, Drinkwitz is going to jump up this chart. I think, you know, based on the talent he's had to work with, his 2 years there in Columbia, I think he's done a hell of a job there with this offense. Now he's starting to get more of these pieces. Now he's getting some of these receivers that can really challenge an SEC defense. I think Drinkwitz, if he gets his explosive plays, again, I think he's going to be one of the SEC's best play callers before long. Number five, SEC offensive play caller, the Pirate, Mike Leach. I mean, it almost feels disrespectful putting him this low, but top five is pretty damn good to me. We all know I mean, they're just a high-flying offense that they shatter passing records each and every year, wherever the hell he's going. And it's not just the passing, though. Third best offense in the SEC on third downs, third best in explosive passing plays, and, of course, Will Rogers. I mean, I can't believe some people are overlooking what Will Rogers did as a sophomore. Nearly 5,000 4,739 passing yards, school record, 36 touchdowns, school record. And this ain't no program that's been around for 10, 20, 30 years. They've been playing football down there in Starkville for well over 100 years, and they're just shattering records here. Now, I think the best is yet to come for Mississippi State and this offense. And, of course, it's all centered around Mike Leach and his ability to make the right call on offense. It's a simple system, but they run it down there to perfection. And Will Rogers, he's got that thing humming. So just an incredible duo they make. And this year should take the SEC West by storm. Mike Leach, give me him at number 5. Now, number 4, I got Todd Monken, Georgia Bulldogs. Average 38.6 points per game, third in the SEC. And again, the receivers were banged up. Really had to utilize running backs and tight ends, so he showed a great ability to adapt to his personnel. They led the country in 14 touchdowns of 25 yards or more. That's just outstanding. The number 3 most efficient offense in the country. And again, JT Daniels was the starting quarterback. I mean, I think some people forget that heading into the season. Of course, they had to make the switch to Stetson Bennett, and everybody was waiting for Stetson to get benched. It never happened. Breakout season for Stetson. Breakouts for Brock Bowers, Ladd McConkey, A.D. Mitchell. 9 out of 10 SEC fans this time last year would have said, who in the hell is Brock Bowers, Ladd McConkey, and A.D. Mitchell? But they were stars for Georgia, and they're going to be stars again because Todd Monken knows what the hell he's doing when it comes to offense. And heaven help the rest of the SEC if Georgia ever gets a Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields type quarterback. You know what I mean? In this system with these playmakers, I mean, it's going to be a sight to be seen here working in a pro-style system if they have a pro quarterback back there in Athens, which they may have a couple on the roster, and hell, they may soon be getting one on the recruiting trail. That's going to be danger for the rest of the SEC as long as Todd Monken's down there. Now, number 3, offensive play caller, I got Kendall Browse. He's the highest rated assistant on this list, in my opinion. We all know what he did with Felipe Franks and KJ Jefferson. Arkansas went from 21 points average the year prior to Browse getting there up to 30.9 last season. Just a tremendous jump. Arkansas had the number 1 rushing attack in the SEC. They can be tempo. They can go physical and slow it down. Third best in the SEC in converting red zone opportunities into points. So Kendall Browse, I love what he's doing with his system. Very similar to the style they're running at our top 2 play callers here, but we're splitting hairs here in the top 3, to be honest with you. Kendall Browse, I think he's done a hell of a job taking what he inherited and turning this into one of the best SEC offenses, and I think it's going to be even better this year with KJ Jefferson and those linemen returning. They are going to be a physical force that many teams are not going to be able to handle this year. Now, number 2, maybe a little controversial here, Lane Kiffin. A lot of people have him as the number 1 play caller, not only in the SEC, but in the country. And I wouldn't necessarily argue with that, but because Ole Miss, number 3 in the SEC in explosive plays of 20 or more yards, behind only Alabama and Georgia. They went for it 40 times on fourth down, and they converted 60% of them. I love the fact that Lane Kiffin is aggressive as hell. May have bit him in the ass against Alabama and a time or two the rest of the season, but I love the confidence. I love that, the message that sends to the players. They're playing to win down there in Oxford. They're not playing, just to be competitive. And when you're going against a team like Alabama, you have to be ultra, ultra, ultra aggressive if you're Ole Miss because you just don't got the talent that Alabama has. So you have to make your own break. So Lane Kiffin, keep doing what you're doing. I think you're doing a hell of a job. Scoring average has jumped dramatically since Kiffin got there. It was 26.6 the year prior, 39.2 in 2020, slightly down 33.7 last year, but I think a lot of that had to do with Matt Corral going getting banged up towards the tail end of the season. But now here's the two. This is kind of the only difference here, why I didn't have him number one. Dead last Ole Miss was in scoring percentage in the red zone. 75% of their trips into the red zone ended in scoring. They got to do a lot better than that. Dead last scoring in the red zone. So, hey, you got to do better than that. The red zone, that's when it matters most. You've got to convert into touchdowns. And, you know, they had a lot of trouble doing that last year, which, again, this is a very, very small thing to pick on Ole Miss here. But that was kind of the difference for me. And then, of course, number one, Josh Heupel. That's for you, Tennessee Homer out there. Tennessee set the all-time mark for points scored in a season, 511. Just imagine, they went from unwatchable under Jeremy Pruitt to setting the scoring mark, and they did it with a bunch of players nobody wanted. Hendon Hooker, I mean, he was decent at Virginia Tech, but he was not a coveted prospect. Cedric Tillman, who in the hell's that? He had 7 catches going into last season. Now he's an All-American. Valus Jones Jr., I mean, he was a nobody. He's now in the NFL. Javonta Payton, been in the SEC at multiple stops there. Never did anything. Breakout player. Jamari Small, same thing. Jacob Warren. I mean, these are players that, you know, Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss, they wouldn't take these guys. I don't think so. Yet they became incredibly successful players for Josh Heupel. 39.3 points per game. Number 2 in the SEC. And that was up from 21.5 the year previous. So they went from number 12 in the SEC in scoring to number 2, again, in just a single offseason. And they had the number 6 most efficient offense in the country, which, again, is just mind-boggling considering what they had to work with, the lack of depth, and the issues across the board with this roster. Yet they turned it into a lethal, lethal offense by season's end. All right, so skipping over to the defensive play callers, we got a couple more. We've had a number of good defensive play callers leave the SEC. Of course, Dan Lanning, now at Oregon head coach. Mike Elko, now he's the head coach at Duke. Steve Wilks left for the Carolina Panthers. Durante Jones left for the Minnesota Vikings. And old Todd Grantham, everybody's favorite, down there in Tuscaloosa now. So we've had some turnover, not as much star power at the defensive coordinator position in the SEC. And we've also got a couple more incompletes. Don't really know how to grade these guys, so I just gave them tied them all for the lowest gradings. Jeff Schmetting down there at Auburn. Again, another one where they hired Derek Mason. Derek Mason left town, and they had to promote from within. We got Chris Partridge, Maurice Crum at Ole Miss. Again, I just don't know much about those guys to give them a rating. And then Nick Howell at Vanderbilt, they lost their defensive coordinator to the Baltimore Ravens, so they promoted Nick Howell to defensive coordinator. When really, it's Clark Lee's defense. But so I got those guys at the bottom of the list. So we'll go with the first guy that I do have ranked here, number 11, Blake Baker, Missouri. I didn't watch hardly any of his defenses when he was with the Miami Hurricanes, but he served as defensive coordinator under Manny Diaz from 2019 to 2020, and Miami regressed across the board. Scoring defense, explosive plays allowed, third down stops, red zone defense, all tracked in the wrong direction during Blake Baker's time. He inherited a Miami defense that was number 8 in the country in defensive efficiency. His first season, they fell to 27th. His second season, they fell to 59th, and then he was gone. So, Blake Baker, this is this hire leaves a lot to be desired by Drinkwitz. I think it was the timing with Steve Wilks really caught him. Now, I will say this, though. He did a hell of a job at LSU coaching linebacker, so Missouri should have some good linebacker play, but I don't know about Blake Baker as a defensive coordinator. He's my lowest graded defensive coordinator at number 11. Now, number 10, Tim Banks, Tennessee. Number 10 in the SEC in allowing explosive plays. Number 12 in scoring. 13 in defensive stops on third down. And number 13 in red zone stops. So, just across the board, terrible metrics, but, you know, I'll be honest with you. I thought Tim Banks, as low as I have him here, you might be surprised to hear me say this, I thought he did a serviceable job last season. I mean, those players were playing hard. They were aggressive. Now, they got just exposed against teams you think they would, like Alabama and Georgia. But considering what they were working with, I mean, you can't fault them for those games. But it was the other ones, Kentucky, which I know they won the game, Ole Miss. I mean, they just went up and down the field on them. Pitt was another one. So he's working with more talent, more depth this season. The defense has got to be a hell of a lot better than it was last season if Tennessee is going to realize those hopes and reach 8, 9, maybe even 10 wins. If they play as poorly as they did last year, there's no chance in hell that happens. So Tim Banks, he's got a lot to prove if he wants to move up this list, but he's got better pieces this year. I'll give him that. Now, number 9 on my list, I got Patrick Toney, the new Florida defensive coordinator who was at Louisiana. And again, he did a hell of a job at Louisiana, but it was the Sun Belt. But his unit was number 1 in scoring defense in the Sun Belt, 18.5 points per game allowed, number 5 on third down stops, number 5 on explosive plays allowed, and number 6 in red zone stops. So very solid numbers for a Sun Belt defense. But again, until you prove it in the SEC, I can't put you much higher than number 9 for Patrick Toney, the new Florida Gators defensive coordinator. Now, number 8, I got Zach Arnett, the Mississippi State defensive coordinator, who I thought his first season was a little bit better than his second season. They allowed too many explosive plays here in some big games that really cost the Bulldogs. His defense, number 7 in allowing explosive plays, they allowed 53. Number 9 in the SEC in scoring allowed. Number 10 in red zone stops. Number 12 in third down stops. And, you know, Mississippi State's only going to go as far as that defense improves, because we all know what we're getting with the offense. It's going to be one of the best, most productive units in the SEC. This defense really needs to step up. Maybe now that Zach Arnett's been there a little while, you know, he runs a unique 3-3-5 system. He's getting a lot more players. They've added via the transfer portal to shore up defensive backfield. They got Emmanuel Forbes back. He's one of the best corners in the SEC, but they need some help around him. If they've chosen wisely in the transfer portal, Mississippi State could have themselves a little nasty defense this fall. Now, number 7, I didn't really know where to rank this guy. Very polarizing. But Will Muschamp, number 7, Georgia Bulldogs. And I know Glenn Schumann, I mean, they're going to split the title. It's really, you know, it's Kirby's defense. But I know he trusts Will Muschamp like hardly anyone else. So I think Will Muschamp, we got to give him the nod as the defensive coordinator. And, you know, I'd probably put him a little bit higher, but you know, his South Carolina defenses there at the tail end of his time there were just terrible. And they got better under Clayton White, who we're going to get to in a minute here. But he's got experience, of course, at LSU and Auburn and all over the SEC, Florida, of course. But Will Muschamp, you know, he's going to be working with a lot better athletes than he's maybe ever had to work with in his career. And, hell, it showed last year with how dominant that defense was. They're going to be pretty damn dominant again on defense, no doubt, there in Athens. So I didn't know where to put Will Muschamp, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't think he's terrible, like some people would lead you to believe. I don't think he's the best either, though. And, you know, I just go back to his South Carolina defense is falling apart, and then Clayton White coming in there in a single offseason and shoring it up. That was kind of damning, I thought, a little bit of Will Muschamp. So I'm going to keep him number 7 until further notice. So number 6... we got Clayton White, the South Carolina defensive coordinator, who surprised me last year with the way that defense played. They had issues defending the run, of course, but overall, very solid unit. Number 6 in the SEC in allowing explosive plays. Number 7 in scoring. Number 11, now here's where they really need to improve. Red zone scoring percentage and third down stops were 11th for each of those. But South Carolina has got to love what they got in Clayton White. Really came in and stabilized that defense, which again was one of the worst in the SEC in the final season under Will Muschamp. And then they became middle of the road last year. Now they need to take that next step with you know, some good defensive linemen, some good defensive backs. This could be a much improved South Carolina Gamecock defense this fall. Now, number 5, I got DJ Durkin, Of course, the new Texas A&M defense coordinator was at Ole Miss. And his numbers are not mind-blowing by any means, but you got to take into consideration where Ole Miss was before they took over down there. I mean, it was god-awful. Number 5 in the SEC in red zone scoring percentage last year, number 8 in scoring defense, number 8 in third down stops, and number 10 in allowing explosive plays. But again, he was at Ole Miss. They don't have a ton of talent. Now he's going to be working with a much, much better defensive unit there in College Station. So I do not expect these numbers to remain the same for DJ Durkin's units this fall in College Station. I think Texas A&M is going to continue to have one of the best defenses in the country. They may have the best defensive backfield out there, and they've got all kinds of studs on the defensive line, and they've got some really promising linebackers as well. So DJ Durkin, I got you top 5, and I think that's a perfect spot for him right now. This is a guy that I've graded harshly in years past, but you know, I think he deserves this. Number 4 in the SEC, Pete Golding, Alabama. They were the number 6th most efficient defense in the country last season, number 2 in the SEC, number 1 in third down stops, number 3 in allowing explosive plays, and number 8 in red zone stops. But again, kind of similar to what I was saying about Bill O'Brien, I mean, Alabama's got more talent than anybody. So if you're not at the top of the list, I got to put that on the coaching. And for all this, you know, everybody is hyped up about Alabama's defense. They think it's going to be, you know, it was somebody on Paul Feinbaum the other day saying this is going to be the best Alabama team ever under Nick Saban. They haven't played a game yet. Like, let's not go overboard here. I know they got Will Anderson, who likely is going to be the best player in the country. They got all kinds of talent to work with. They've added some pieces in the transfer portal. Alabama should be great on defense, but I'm pumping the brakes on all-time great until further notice. There's just too many times where, you know, their defense, you know, I think of the Tennessee game, didn't look great. Georgia lit them up, of course, in the national championship game. Florida ran all over them. Arkansas had their way with them. And all these teams I'm mentioning, they don't have anywhere close to the roster that Alabama has. So we've got to shore things up. Again, number 4 defensive play caller in the SEC. I'm not sitting here saying he's terrible, but a lot of work to be done, in my opinion. Number 3 defensive play caller. Now, this may surprise some people. I got Brad White, Kentucky. I think they did a hell of a job there in Kentucky last season. Number 4 in scoring defense. Number 4 in allowing explosive plays. But they got to get better in the red zone for sure. Number 12 in red zone stops, allowed points on 89%. Of drives that reach the red zone there against Kentucky, and number 9 and third down stop. So again, you got to factor what Kentucky has got to work with. And I know the talent is getting better and better and better each year in Lexington, but when you got the number 4 scoring, you allow the 4th least amount of explosive plays, and you're up there at Kentucky, that tells me Brad White's doing a hell of a job with this defense, because they do not have the 4th most talented defense. I guarantee you that. The production is significantly higher than the overall talent because they work together there in Kentucky. Brad White, it's got something special up here in Lexington. He's got something special up here in Lexington. There's a reason he turned down that LSU job. You know, he thinks he's got to have one hell of a defense returning this fall in Lexington. But speaking of LSU, hey, they turned out just all right because they got another former Kentucky defensive coordinator, Matt House. I got him all the way up at number 2. And this is probably going to surprise a lot of people. He hasn't coached in college since 2018, but when he was coaching in college, he was at Kentucky, and Kentucky was number 2 in the SEC in scoring defense, allowed only 16.8 points per game. They were number 3 in the SEC in red zone stops and touchdown percentage, and number 5 in allowing explosive plays. And again, you got to remember, this is 2018. This was even less talent to work with, in my opinion, at Kentucky. And I know they developed Josh Allen, who was just an incredible beast down there for him. He was a huge factor in all that. But, you know, 2-star guy they developed into a first rounder. Matt House then goes on to the NFL. So I think that's going to help him learning more intricacies of the NFL game and slowing down these spread system. So I think LSU knocked it out of the park with Matt House. I think he's going to be one of the best defensive coordinators in the SEC this year. So that leaves just one guy, my man Barry Odom. I got him number one defensive coordinator in the SEC. The Razorbacks, number three in third down stops last season, number three in red zone stops. They had the number 17th most efficient defense in the country, number five in the SEC in limiting explosive plays, and number six scoring defense at 21.8 points per game. And again, you got to factor in what's he got to work with compared to the rest of the SEC. Arkansas certainly on the rise, but I mean, they are massively overproducing based on their overall talent to the rest of the SEC West. So Barry Odom, he is doing one hell of a job down there in Fayetteville, and it's not going to be long before he's the head coach again. I truly do believe that. So you add up all those ratings, and what do we got? We got far and away, same metric I've been saying for basically 2 years now, and it's played out on the field. Arkansas has got the best duo of coordinators in the SEC. That remains the case, in my opinion. And I've got Georgia, Alabama, and Tennessee. They all scored the same grade here in my metrics here. So Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, I got all of them tied for second best coordinators in the SEC. LSU right there after those three, Texas A&M, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Kentucky, Missouri, South Carolina, Florida, Vanderbilt, and Auburn dead last in my coordinator rankings in the SEC. So that's where I see it heading into the season. We are definitely in the middle of ranking season. I'm sitting here breaking down coordinators for damn near an hour here heading into the weekend. But I wanted to get that out to give you guys one more show heading into the weekend. And I'm sure everybody's going to be bitching and moaning about my selection. So feel free to hammer me on social media, on the YouTube comments, however you want to do it. I'm here to listen to your feedback. But hey, that's going to do it for this episode of the show. I've already got two guests lined up. Cousin Shane's going to be back on the next show for Monday. We've already got a great idea. Cousin Shane is actually doing some work behind the scenes. So hey, next week should be full of great content. So be on the lookout for all that content next week. We ain't going nowhere, even here in the middle of the off season. But that's going to do it for this episode of the show. We'll catch you on the next one.